It's now time for the MLB.com Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast. It's a cast from Cut Four. Here it is.
Hello and welcome to the Cut Forecast. I'm Dakota Gardner. I'm joined, as always, by Gemma Kaneko.
Sup?
Sup with you?
You know, it's warm out. I'm happy.
It is warm out. At long last, the actual warm season is here. You know my feelings about that. But we are also joined right now by the man who spent all winter in the warm season, Christopher Landers of the Cut Four Austin Bureau. Welcome to the Cut Forecast again, Chris.
Hello. Thank you for having me. Yeah, we've entered what we call pre-summer in Texas, so it's just like 90 every day now.
Okay, that sounds actually kind of horrible, even though I love hot weather.
No, nothing's happy for Goldilocks. We have a packed show, so we are going to get right to it. We'll discuss the most important story of the week, the cat delay in Miami. We'll also share our thoughts on the new Super Bucko Run promotion in Pittsburgh. We'll check in with Grandpa Rossi and his performance on Dancing with the Stars, which continues to go on unabated. And then maybe we'll discuss a lady by the name of Martha Stewart and whether or not she is responsible for the lack of history being made at Yankee Stadium. But before we get to all of that, the Mariners have a dish on their menu called toasted grasshoppers. No, this is not a joke. This is not a fake dish. This is a real thing that exists, and they're real grasshoppers. Like they're real. They're seasoned with chili lime salt, and they're crunchy. And on the broadcast on Tuesday, the announcers Todd Callis and Jeff Blum were making a lot of jokes about it, and their field reporter, intrepid Astros field reporter, Julia Morales, since they were playing the Mariners, decided to taste these grasshoppers. She did not seem to enjoy it. Do you guys have thoughts on the toasted grasshopper? Is this a trend, eating bugs, that you guys can get behind?
I think this is cool. I mean, it's like this is just like a food that people eat all the time, all over the place. It's like a snack. It's crunchy and it's tasty. And this one has chili lime salt, so that's probably pretty good. I'm a fan. And also, obviously, so are Mariners fans because they sold out. And they're home and over. They sold out.
I find this gross. Landers, what do you think? Are you in on grasshoppers or are you out on grasshoppers?
I'm in on anything that is weird, basically. I know we're all in love with the ballpark concessions arms race, and I am too. I love eating burgers in between giant pizza pies. That's like all well and good. But I think we can get a little funkier and get more kind of regional with it. I don't know. Anything that the average fan probably has never experienced before is like a good addition to the ballpark menu.
Also, this is light, you know, because sure, everybody wants a sandwich that has every type of meat known to humans on it. Sure, whatever. But sometimes you're like, I just want to eat something and I want it to be light and I want it to be crunchy, but I'm sick of peanuts. So, all right, let's have some grasshoppers.
You know, if you don't like it, you don't like it. You don't have to have it again.
I just think, who's the person who was like, I'm sitting here, I'm loving this baseball game. This is such a good time. You know what would make it better? If I were eating insects, that would make this like the perfect
people with adventurous palates, Dakota. That too.
Obviously, a ton of people because again, they sold.
They
out.
Sold out because they're there. Like the opportunity is, and so people are like, "Oh, well, I have to have the grass." Like who's the person who was clamoring for this?
I feel like you just explained it though. Like the opportunity is there, and obviously enough people wanted the opportunity that it would just unlock this deep love of crunchy bugs.
I think the real test will be in the staying power of the grasshoppers. Like in a month or two, are they still selling out and people are like coming back to get second and third grasshopper servings? Like that'll be
that is the question. I don't think so. This seems like one of those novelty. I'll do it once. I mean, like again, if you go to MLB.com/cut4, you can see Julia Morales' face as she eats these insects, and she doesn't look like a lady who's having a good time. That's all I'm saying. She looks unhappy. That is how I would look. Can somebody explain to me the difference between a cricket and a grasshopper?
No, I can't.
Because I think they're two different things.
They are.
They're definitely different bugs. I think a cricket's smaller than a grasshopper.
Yeah. And does which one of them sings? Both of them? One?
I think crickets do.
And the legs?
Yeah, they play the
rectangle and square sort of deal.
I see. I thought maybe, wait, it's a rectangle square thing. So like all crickets are grasshoppers, but not all grasshoppers are crickets.
I thought they were related, but I could be wrong. I stopped taking biology like 12 years ago, so I don't listen to that thing.
This is not the bug forecast, okay?
Maybe it should be. Maybe it should be bug four. Let's stay in the animal kingdom for just another moment. I don't know if you saw this, but on Tuesday night in the game between the Marlins and the Braves at Marlins Park, there was one person in the stadium who did not, or not a person, there was one individual in the stadium who did not have a ticket, and they made their presence known by sprinting out onto the field and causing a delay. It was, of course, a cat. The cat scaled the outfield wall and then went to hide in the home run sculpture. They actually asked Marcell Ozuna about it after the game. This is his quote. I think this is an incredible quote. I'm going to read the whole thing. "The first thing I was thinking, bad luck. And then I said, okay, you're here for some reason. Maybe our good luck. Let's play. Every time I came out for defense, I looked at the cat out there, hiding its head into the thing. I'm thinking, what are you doing out there? The last inning, I don't see it. I don't know. Where'd he go? And then he said, I detest cats. I don't like them. No allergies. I don't like them. I am obsessed with Marcell Ozuna's answer to this question. Just his whole like play-by-play of this cat. I agree with him wholeheartedly on most of just that maybe it's for bad luck. Oh, wait, no, they won the game, so clearly it's for good luck. Also, the cat was eventually rescued, and they've dubbed it the Rally Cat, of course. And he was released, but then he escaped into the night once more after they captured him. So this, who knows, he may reappear at Marlins Park. Could be a big Marlins fan. Him and Pitbull.
Maybe Pitbull, maybe Pitbull, it's like a Professor McGonagall situation, and that cat was Pitbull.
Oh, he's Animagus.
Yes.
That's the Harry Potter term?
Yes. Announced Dile at some point, like 5 months from now, we're all going to know the truth.
Have you, what do you guys think about cats, just in general? Well, there is bark at the park. There is no meow at the park.
Well, I think it's because that would immediately be what would happen. I'm, like, actually kind of surprised that a dog has never run onto the field. Because we've seen it happen in, like, college games or soccer games, when a dog just that's, like, around will run onto the field. But cats, I guess, you know, they can hide in more places because they're all squishy. So
and they're also very nimble. They can get, you know, I'm not sure a dog could have clambered onto the home run sculpture last night.
Yeah, it couldn't have climbed up the outfield wall like that, which is very impressive to watch, actually. That cat should be like a highlight.
It was impressive.
Yeah, that cat could probably be a good outfielder.
I just the idea of
torn. You have to steal his job in center field.
Well, I just like the idea again of Marcell Ozuna walking out there being like, what are you doing here, cat? And just thinking that in his head the whole night.
Also that he's like, ah, I hate cats. I detest cats. He doesn't even have allergies. He just doesn't like them.
He went through a full emotional
journey. What if there was some kind of home run situation? Like, what if there were just, like, what if there was, like, a pet's play place at ballparks that pets just were? Like, there were just cats and
just
dogs.
Think,
and it was, you know, sheltered, but you could see it. Instead of a ray tank, you know, or something like that, what if there was, you know, like a cat tank?
I have the opinion that every major league team, in addition to their normal non-animal mascot, should have a live animal mascot on hand. And, like, during some innings break, at some point during the game, they just let them onto the field and see what happens. I think this is, like, the real frontier in ballpark entertainment. I'm serious.
You remember when Hank got to be in the sausage race and they dressed him up like a little hot dog? They should just have lots of little dogs race each other and in the mascot race.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, don't let, like, a bear loose on the field if you're the Cubs. Some sort of cute, non-threatening animal and just kind of see what happens.
Yeah, that would be fun. I'm behind this.
I still think it's unfair that there is no cat-related bark at the park type event.
Would
I don't know what it would be
called.
Bring
a cat to the ballpark.
Yes. Cats are great.
Would the cat actually enjoy that, though?
No, but it's not about the cat. No, if the cat had its way, it would not live with you.
Right.
So you're already putting yourself upon the cat. So taking it to the ballpark is for you. It's not for the cat. Although this cat seemed to have a good time.
I mean, but what if the cat just, like, decided it needed to go, like, for a run or, like, go catch something? Because cats like to do that.
Yeah.
Well, then Marcell Ozuna would have another good luck cat.
I will say that I thought that the Marlins suggested it be named Don Cattingly, and I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. He Don Mattingly himself actually was. He thought this might be the newest mascot for the Marlins.
Yes.
So, Godspeed, Cat, wherever you are. I don't know what you're doing.
Into the night.
I imagine he is a very, very dedicated Cut 4 Cast listener. So just please give us a call, Rally Cat, and tell us your side of the story. I want to hear, because, you know, I want to hear his quote. It's probably like, I was at this place, and then I sprinted out into this grassy field. There was this guy there. I thought maybe he was bad luck for me to scale the wall, but apparently he was good luck. We don't know. I don't like Marcelo Ozuna. I'm not allergic to him. I just don't like him.
Maybe the cat was like, oh, there's, you know, a giant dolphin. I'm going to eat it. Like, look at that big fish that's flying through the air. I'm going to go eat it. That's probably what the cat wanted to do.
I would just like to inform everyone that as of last night, at Marlins Cat is an active Twitter account. So at Marlins Cat, if you're listening, please use hashtag cutforecast and get back to us.
We think you're a cool cat.
Boo, next topic.
I want to stick though with things running because that's a good segue.
Yeah, that's really good.
The Pirates debuted this new bit of in-stadium entertainment. They don't do it every game. They do it every like four or five games. It's on the new video board on right field, the Clemente wall. It's called Super Bucko Run. This is the coolest thing I have ever seen. They grab a fan and the fan comes onto the field. And they run like a level on Super Mario Brothers, but it's like real. And they stand in front of the video board, which has the level on it, the little platform. And you jump up, and you punch the block, and you get a coin, or you get a little mushroom. And it's the coolest thing I've ever seen. What are your thoughts about this, Gemma?
It's so cool. I feel like this is the dream of. I mean, okay. So they're definitely, like, the dream of VR games, right, is that you'd be able to play it like this. But also, the added addition that it's in the ballpark on this giant video board, like, bigger than anything you could ever see in your house, obviously, or an arcade even, you know. When I was a teenager, like a tween, I guess, we used to go to the mall arcade, and they had this hot air balloon video game where you sat in a chair that went up and down as you flew the hot air balloon. But it, like, went up pretty high, you know. You could fall and you would be hurt, like, that kind of high. And that was cool, but this would be beyond every other level because it's like one, your favorite baseball team, presumably. Though it maybe would stress you out if you did a bad job and people were watching.
Watching as you fail at Mario.
that'd be really sad.
But just like in terms of technology, I'm amazed by this. I'm obsessed with it.
I think it's the coolest thing. Landers, do you want to do Super Bucko?
Absolutely. Run? Although Gemma's last point is the thing I'm wondering about. Like, I want to know how exactly they pulled this off. Like, how does the board know when you're punching the block? It's like the whole thing is like witchcraft.
I don't know. It's magic. It is the coolest thing. I am so obsessed with this. If you live in the Pittsburgh area, please go. And if you end up running in Super Bucko Run, let us know, and good luck.
And can
to
we
you.
Have them wear like a GoPro to document their Super Bucko Run experience?
Yes.
That might be happening. So just stay tuned. That may end up actually happening. But before we move on, I want to take a second to talk to you about the Fantasy 411 podcast. Now, I am in a fantasy league with Gemma and Chris and a number of other Cut 4 writers. I am in second place. Just thought everyone should know that. But do you want to know why I am near the top of our fantasy league? It's because I listen to the Fantasy 411 podcast. Fred Zinke and Matthew Leach will cover the bases for you all season long and give you an edge over your friends in whatever fantasy league that you are in. No matter what kind of format you play, the MLB fantasy crew has been there and won that, and they will help you win too. They're helping me. It is great. In the last episode, Matthew and Fred discussed why batting order is so important in determining which players to acquire and to start. So make sure that before you set your lineup or check out the waiver wire, follow the Fantasy 411 podcast on iTunes today. That is Fantasy 411. It is now time, however, to check in with Grandpa Rossi. And Dancing with the Stars. It is week 3, I think, of him being on Dancing with the Stars. Week 4. Time has flown by. And he's done really well. This one was particularly interesting, not just because of the song itself, which was Forever Young,
his old walk-up song,
but because his Cubs teammates, on the night that Dancing with the Stars aired, were raising the World Series banner at Wrigley Field for the first time in Wrigley Field history. which is a nice little fact there. And while they were getting ready for this, they actually screened the show on the big Jumbotron in center field at Wrigley Field. That is cool.
That is very, very cool.
That is super cool. Also, David Ross is still doing well.
And he got like 30? Isn't the top score 40 that you can get?
I think also Cub Nation is really bringing him to like glory here.
They're voting for him. Again, I do think, it's like Eurovision, you know? I don't know if you guys ever watch Eurovision, which is totally insane. Like, let's have random European countries submit pop songs to be judged. And it's like, vote for the best. But obviously no one in Poland is like, oh, you know, I loved France's song. I'm going to vote for France. Like, that's not how that goes. So that's what Cubs Nation is. But so, like, Cubs is the Eurovision country, and every other person, like, has nothing like that. They're all stateless.
Wasn't ABBA Eurovision?
Yeah, that's what
got them. How they became famous?
Yes.
Are there other famous, like, I mean, not Celine Dion, right? Because Canada's not in Europe. Right.
But, like, so in the early, we don't have to go through the history of Eurovision right now.
Who are the other big Eurovision
people? Early days of Eurovision, it was way less, like, about production values and insanity. So some of those people did end up getting recording contracts. Like, a lot of, like, French pop stars that you have heard, if you listen to that, are, like, Belgian and French Eurovision winners.
I think there's the Venn diagram of people who listen to French pop music and the Cut Forecast is a circle.
I mean, it must be. But but David Ross is actually, as I've said again, extremely committed, which is the thing that impresses me the most about him is I think a lot of people who don't do this, who are maybe familiar with other kinds of athletic pursuits, don't necessarily get the acting aspect of it, but he really does. Like, his facial expressions, his commitment constantly, it's so good.
There's also a sense of, like, being too cool for school that a lot of people have when they go on this, where they're like, I'm going to try, but I'm also going to performatively be bad at it so people don't think that I'm good at dancing. And, like, he doesn't do that, which I really respect.
Yeah.
Chris, are you what is your relationship with Grandpa Rossi on the show? Are you enthused?
I do, partly because of what we were talking about. I think Cubs Twitter, if anything, if the past 12 to 18 months has taught us anything, it's that Cubs Twitter is a very powerful force. And not to take anything away from Grandpa Rossi's formidable and, like, truly kind of surprising dancing skills, I think Cubs Twitter is going to put him over the top. When I was watching the scene when they were showing his routine on the scoreboard and everything, I really wanted to be able to go back in time and try to explain that whole night to a Cubs fan, like, circa 2005, and see, like, just trying to explain the whole thing, both David Ross and David Ross dancing and in the World Series scene. It was, like, a really surreal moment.
That is a really good point. You'd be like, okay, so the Braves backup catcher is going to become a cult hero for your team who will win the World Series.
First of all, you win the World Series. Spoiler alert.
You're right. That is a really, really solid point.
That would be so fun.
This last thing I want to talk about, though. This is, like, I think, the intersection of my baseball fandom. Because I care tremendously about jinxes.
Mm-hmm.
I think pitching is the coolest thing that happens in baseball. And so the idea of jinxing a perfect game to me is just the nexus of my baseball interests. And it turns out that there was an added component that I wasn't even aware of that I wanted from this nexus, which is the inclusion of Martha Stewart.
Mm-hmm. Important.
For the Yankees home opener, Michael Pineda was the pitcher, and he struck out 11 in 2 2/3 innings en route to an 8-1 victory over the Rays. That, in and of itself, is pretty cool. If you're a Yankees fan, I'm sure it's pretty exciting. But it wasn't the major story, which was that Pineda was actually perfect through 6 of those innings. And then in the 7th inning, a certain individual, Martha Stewart, tweeted the following, quote, "It's the top of the 7th here at Yankee Stadium, and the Yankees are pitching a perfect game versus the Tampa Rays." Now, first of all, they're the Tampa Bay Rays. Second of all, Martha Stewart, as far as we know, does not tweet very often about baseball. This is kind of a rare thing. So odd that she would just pipe up in the middle of a perfect game to be like, yo, there's a perfect game going on. Also, moments after she sent this tweet, Evan Longoria of the Tampa Rays hit a double and broke up the perfect game. The perfect game was over. The question I am posing to the two of you, did Martha Stewart jinx Michael Pineda's perfect game?
Well, as rationalists here at Cut 4, I'm sure we all know that jinxes are not real.
Jinxes are real.
But I do think it's really amazing how many people wanted to blame Martha Stewart for ruining the perfect game. I wish she would live tweet baseball all the time. I would really enjoy following that. And I'm wondering, maybe she, I don't know, I wouldn't say that she did jinx it, but maybe she wanted to jinx it.
Oh.
Maybe she is like a
Secret
really
Rays fan.
Serious, or like she's a Mets fan and she's like, there's no way that the Yankees are going to get a perfect game before Syndergaard does. Like, that's not cool. Or maybe like Snoop hates the Yankees and she was doing him a favor because they're friends now. And she's like, I'm going to just like jinx
well,
the
team. She does have street cred. So. Chris, what do you think jinxes are real?
No, although I will say, as a Yankee fan, I've gone full Martha Stewart truther on this, and then I'm convinced that she tweeted with malicious intent. Because as you mentioned, she doesn't often tweet about baseball, so it's awfully convenient that she would tweet just mere seconds before Michael Boneta's perfect game was ruined. But also, no, jinxes are not real.
Okay, two things here. One, jinxes are real. Two, if you know anything about jinxes, you know that the malicious jinx is actually not possible. That in order for the jinx to truly work, you can't be jinxing with the intention of jinxing, because that then undoes the jinx. There are accidental.
Where are these jinxing bylaws that I've apparently missed?
Well, as you know, if you are a longtime listener of the Cut 4 Cast, my father is probably the greatest jinx that I've ever known. And one of the great theorems of my father's jinxing is that he cannot jinx the Phillies, or their opponents when they're playing. For example, he'll sometimes joke and he'll be like, "Oh, you know, the Red Sox have got this on lock," and then you know, we might win or we might not win, because his intention there is like, "I'm going to jokingly jinx your team," and so it doesn't work. It only works if you're jinxing A, your own team, or B, inadvertently. The moment you put actual thought and effort into it, it no longer becomes a jinx. So that is why when you ask people whether they should talk about a perfect game, they will say, no, absolutely not. Do not talk about a perfect game, because the thesis there, the assumption, is that you want there to be a perfect game. If you don't want there to be a perfect game and you talk about it, it's going to have no effect on it one way or the other.
So the whole point, so sports fandom is just pretending like that you don't care about anything. If you really want your team to do well, you just have to really be like, oh, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Yes.
I don't care.
That is true. That is true. The only way to be happy is to pretend, convince yourself that you don't actually care about sports.
Wow, that's really bleak and sad.
Well, no, because the joy of sports is not in the happiness. It's in the sadness. Ask Cubs fans.
A very
brief
spikes of happiness.
Well, that'll be interesting to see what happens now with Cubs fans and their emotional journey. Though, obviously, you know, 100 years, that's a long time.
It's a long time.
But, I mean, if the Cubs stay as good as they are, will Cubs fans still believe that the journey is in the sadness?
You don't enjoy the view from the top of the mountain if you haven't been down in the valley.
Landers, how do you feel about that as a Yankee?
I mean, I feel like my opinion on this is sort of skewed by the fact that the Yankees won many titles when I was a child. they've only won one in the past 16 or 17 years, I guess now, which I realize it's not a very long time. But, yeah, I do think there's something to the daily struggle being where, like, the real value of a sports fan is. And, like, yeah, I mean, it's obviously everyone loves to win, but the winning is meaningful when it's the culmination of a journey.
I think that's sort of what I was trying to get at.
So basically, we're all jinxes for our teams.
We're all
as soon as you care, you've already lost.
Because we want it too much.
We want it way too much. but guys, it is now time to welcome into the podcast a one Ben Hill from MILB.com. He's the guy who basically every time you hear about an incredible minor league promotion that is happening, he is the guy on the ground discovering this promotion for us. I'm excited to talk to him. Aren't you?
I'm so excited.
Let's listen right now.
We're so lucky today to have Ben Hill from MILB.com join us. He writes about the business and culture of minor league baseball. There's so much to get excited for this season, I feel like.
Yeah, and for every season, really, and that's one of the beauties and joys of minor league baseball. There's 160 teams, so there's always something going on.
We just recently wrote a Cut 4 post about the Toledo Mud Hens Boba Fett jerseys. We see a lot of Star Wars stuff, a lot of special jerseys. So what do you think is going to be the next kind of like zeitgeisty thing that minor league teams really gravitate towards?
Zeitgeisty. I always pronounce it Zeitgeist, and I know that's wrong, but I just like the way Zeitgeist sounds.
No, I like that too.
So I call it the Zeitgeist. Well, I mean, I think the big trend that we've really seen come into play this year, especially, are the food jerseys and teams renaming themselves one night only in honor of a local food cuisine. And that kind of started, you know, a couple years back. The Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs unveiled bacon uniforms. And then the Fresno Tacos changed their name to the Tacos for one night. And then last year, they changed their name to the Tacos every Tuesday.
Oh, smart.
So now it's Taco Tuesdays, and they play as the Fresno Tacos. And then that kind of opened the floodgates for the Scranton Wilkes-Barre pierogies. We have the Reading Whoopie Pies. You know, man, I'm drawing a blank, but there's been quite a few, you know, coming. Staten Island Cannolis, you know, and they keep getting announced. And, you know, it's a great way. Charlotte Pitmasters. See, they're just going to keep coming to me. But, you know, so on a one night only, they'll change their name to a regional food item, have the hat and jersey and all that. So, you know, sells a lot of merch. It's goofy. It's fun. It's minor league baseball. And theme jerseys have just been huge in recent years.
Yeah.
I'm not really too well versed on the technology, but there's sublimation technology where there's just a lot more variety in the sort of patterns and designs that can be incorporated on quick notice.
Mm-hmm.
And also some of the leading companies, they will get licenses. They will get licensed beforehand, so the team doesn't have to try to get a theme jersey licensed. They can just go through a company that already has a license and do it. That's what OT Sports does with Star Wars, which is why there's such a wide variety. Lucasfilm, I guess now it's Disney. You know, they have granted permission through OT Sports and through pretty much anyone, as long as there's a charitable component. But theme jerseys, it's a very deep world. Everything in minor league baseball goes on forever. There's just too many teams.
Yeah, but that's kind of exciting, though, because you can always uncover something new. So how do you suggest, I mean, obviously people follow minor league teams because they're the farm clubs for their favorite MLB teams. But if someone was just deciding, like, I'm going to get really into minor league baseball, where do they start? What is it that they should be looking for?
Well, I think what they should look for is what appeals to them, because in the world of minor league baseball, there's so much diversity. If you like, you know, going to a game with, you know, 400 or 500 people by a team in a rookie level like the Appalachian League and see baseball, you know, quote, how it was used to be played, you know, then go to the Appalachian League and become a fan of the, you know, Princeton Rays or Bluefield Blue Jays or Bristol Pirates and that kind of thing. If you're into, you know, almost like a quasi-major league feel, but with that minor league irreverence, you know, there's the Charlotte Knights with the ballpark with the city skyline in the back, or the El Paso Chihuahuas, where you can see Juarez, not far away, but literally right behind the ballpark.
Wow.
and that kind of thing. So it depends on what you like ballpark-wise, what kind of level of play you like, the sort of spirit the team brings to their promos and presentation. And that's always been the disconnect of my job, is people who are following minor league baseball, you know, not going to their local team's game, but following it, the big picture, usually tracking, you know, prospects and players. But if you're running a minor league team, you don't really care about that. You have no, because you don't control that. That's controlled by the MLB club. So if you work in minor league baseball, it's the entertainment business, and it's just about, you know, getting butts in seats, regardless of the product on the field. And that's why the teams do all the things they do.
I love minor league baseball games. They're so wacky. I feel like between inning entertainment is always on the field. There's always some kind of event happening. It's not just, oh, let's play a video on the scoreboard. What's the wackiest thing? Because you go on road trips. You go to see all these minor league teams in person. So what's the wackiest thing that you've seen happen at a minor league game?
You know, I get asked this question all the time, or variations of it, and then I can never just come up with that one thing because it all blurs together. I have been traveling since 2010, and I've visited almost every single minor league park, and I've seen so many you know, ridiculous things happen, you know, sort of minor key ridiculousness. Sometimes I go back to this answer because, you know, long story short, you know, the job I'm doing now is not what I was hired to do. It's evolved over a long period of time. But the first time I ever went to a ballpark to cover a promotion was a full decade ago almost. Jeez. and it was to see the Altoona Curve do Awful Night, where they just essentially subverted all of the things you'd like at a ballpark and just made it, you know, intentionally bad and gave away sporks at the gate as the giveaway item and posted players' failure averages and had a man with a shirtless man with an S shaved into his chest sing a falsetto seventh inning stretch and all that sort of thing. And it's that kind of spirit that was like, that appeals to me, and now that's what I like to do when I travel, and I try not to have any shame, so, you know, I'll dance for my dinner on the dugout and, you know, sing for the fans and just do anything a team asks me to do to get into that spirit, because it's ridiculousness, you know, 5 months a year, 140 games or what have you, and it's taking place all over the country, and that's what I love about it.
That Awful Night sounds great. It should make a comeback, but you yourself are asked by teams to participate in some of these events?
Yeah, because when I visit a ballpark, that's what I cover, you know, the business and the culture. So I'm not really paying attention to the game. So if a team says, do you want to dress up as, you know, in Sacramento, do you want to, you know, dress up as Ronald Reagan in our heads of state race, you know, and, you know, race against Schwarzenegger and Gray Davis, you know, then, like, sure, I'll do that.
Did you win?
Yeah, I did, but they let me win. They usually let me win. You know, I'm not old, but, you know, most of the time these racers are, like, 22-year-old interns, and they're in really good shape, and they let me just kind of, you know, win. So it's pretty easy. I'm like, here's the plan, guys. It's always the same plan. You two get out to an early lead and then fight and beat each other and trip each other, uh-huh. And I'll just trail back and then win. So I've won a lot of races like that. A lot of different racing food products I've dressed up as. The Tri-City Valley Cats, they have a mayor race because they're the Tri-Cities.
Oh,
Albany, Troy, Schenectady. Mm-hmm. And I believe I was the mayor of Schenectady, and I won that race too. So,
wow.
Yeah, and that's what I like. Every team has a regional angle. You see the same mm-hmm. tropes all over the country, but every team has a regional angle. And that's what I try to highlight. I don't want to write about things in a homogenous fashion. So
right.
I try to pinpoint what is it that makes this team unique, this city unique, and how are these teams and cities a reflection of their communities, and how is this industry a reflection of America?
I love that. I always wish there, you know, because I live in New York City, so it's a lot harder to see minor league ball if you can't, like, really drive a lot. But we have the Cyclones, you know, Staten Island. Sad they're not the Pizza Rats, but I understand that they're...
Maybe someday, or maybe something similar someday. Yeah.
But that's what I love so much, is the sense that, like, the entire country has their own little regionalisms everywhere. What's the strangest thing? What do you think is something that people don't know about that they should know about that exists in minor league baseball?
I mean, where to begin? I mean, regarding what aspect of minor league baseball?
Let's start with club names.
Well, club names, I mean, we've obviously seen a trend in recent years to get, you know, as irreverent as mm-hmm. possible. And, you know, that's really taken off in ways that I wouldn't have imagined when I started this job. Mm-hmm. So just this year, I think we're seeing the debut of some of the, you know, quote-unquote wackiest names we've ever seen in minor league baseball. We're welcoming the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, who used mm-hmm. to be the Suns. We are saying hello to the Binghamton Rumble Ponies, who used to just be the Mets. The New Orleans Baby Cakes, which maybe tops them all in terms of a ridiculous name. The Hartford Yard Goats debuted last year, but, you know, their stadium wasn't ready, so they're actually playing their first game in Hartford tomorrow. So we're seeing a lot of that with the names. And that's just this philosophy of, if you looked at the minor league landscape 30 years ago, 80% of the teams would have just had the name of their parent club. And, you know, there's two things, I don't want to say wrong with that, but one, these affiliation agreements are subject to change. So if your name is just your parent club, then that just changes at the whim of the player development contracts and is subject to change every 2 to 4 years. So you can't brand yourself around that long term necessarily. And two, if you do have the name of a parent club, then you're probably just going to get your merchandise from that parent club. Mm-hmm. If your team's named the Mets, you're just probably going to get some New York Mets gear. But if you're the Rumble Ponies, that's unique to you. So it's a big part of the merchandise, and then just the way you brand yourself around the entire ballpark with the food and the games and the names of all the stadium areas and whatnot. So it's a real overarching philosophy, and you know, it plays out the same way every time.
Mm-hmm.
Fans hear this new name, and they're outraged, and it's a disgrace, and it's an embarrassment. And then you cut 3 months later, and it's like, actually, this is a lot of fun. And, you know, not that everything's successful, but teams wouldn't keep doing this if it didn't have a track record of success. And I think that's what people need to keep in mind before they get too outraged. But
truth. Yeah.
You know, it's the internet. People get mad.
like to get mad. We like to write about promotions a lot, and we've had Billy Hartner, who is promotions guy for the Cyclones, on the show, and he talked about stuff, how they basically come up with ideas, which his description of it is that we drink some adult beverages and sit around and play pinball and talk. But are there any promotions that are coming up this year that you are really excited about?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the typical theme jerseys and bobbleheads and things that are pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
But there's one thing this year that is awesome because it's very specific to this year, and that is, you may be aware, August 21st is there's a national eclipse.
Mm-hmm.
So the eclipse is moving, starting in the West Coast and moving southeast throughout the day, and there's the so-called path of totality, where certain teams or certain cities throughout the day will be in the path of totality, where it'll be totally dark when the eclipse takes place. So there's 5 minor league teams in the path of totality. 4 of them are doing eclipse games, where they're playing a game that will have a purposeful delay for the eclipse, and fans get the sunglasses and just get to witness an eclipse in the ballpark. And I can't think of any examples where there's a built-in delay in a professional baseball game. And I just think that's going to be a really cool thing. And
that is so cool. So do you know the names of those clubs off the top of your head?
I do. The team that originated the idea was the Salem Kaiser Volcanoes in the Pacific Northwest.
What a good name.
Yeah, and so they're going to be in the path of totality first. So their game is like at 10 or 9 something in the morning with an eclipse delay, like 9:45 or 10 a.m. And then the other teams are more on the eastern part of the country, Bowling Green Hot Rods, Nashville Sounds, Columbia Fireflies, are all in the path of totality and having a promotion. And now I feel like I'm blanking on one other team that, of course, will get in touch with me. That's one of the great things about writing about minor league baseball is there's so much going on that I try to be thorough, and then teams are like, well, what about us? What about us? And I'm like, guys, I try my hardest. But I'm actually going to go to the game in Columbia, the Columbia Fireflies, because they have mm-hmm. a glow-in-the-dark theme. It kind of makes sense. And also, they're going to be in the path of totality the longest.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so it's about 2 minutes there. And, you know, who knows, maybe Tim Tebow will still be there, but that's August 21st, and a lot can happen in a baseball season between now and then.
He'll be mad, obviously, right?
That's my guess. My guess is he'll probably get called up in mid-July, and probably by the time the eclipse hits, he'll have about 6 home runs in the majors.
Well, I know I said I wasn't necessarily going to bring up Tim Tebow, but here we go. We got the Fireflies. We're going to talk about it. I mean, what has that been like for the Fireflies? Do you know, or for other minor league clubs to have this kind of
I wrote a story about that at the end of March, from the more minor league, quote-unquote business angle,
mm-hmm.
and it's huge. I mean, you obviously have to go back to 1994 and Michael Jordan to find anything comparable to having a player be such a draw at the minor league level, and it's not something that teams traditionally market because it's the nature of minor league baseball is you might get promoted, demoted, released, traded.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really brand yourself around any specific player, but Tebow, because has no experience in professional baseball, might be around a little longer in Class A. And not just the Fireflies, but every single team in the South Atlantic League is excited because any game he shows up as the opponent means a sellout or close to it,
mm-hmm.
especially early in the season on a night when you might have had 2,000 people, you're going to have 8,000. So it means a lot from that perspective.
That's pretty great. I was kind of disappointed that he didn't do a stint with the Cyclones.
Yeah, a lot of people wanted that.
Yeah.
Who knows? Maybe he'll get demoted once the short season starts, and you can head over there and,
well,
and check him out.
That the Cyclones do a thing where if it's your birthday, you can say, like, oh, it's my birthday, I'm going to buy a birthday package, and then you can pick a player to, like, wish you happy birthday. So we were like, maybe we can get Tim Tebow to wish one of us happy birthday.
It sounds totally plausible to me.
Well, what is your prediction for the future of Tebow in the minors?
I really don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
The minors are so hard to predict. I think in Class A, he's doing okay so far, and I think he'll continue to do well enough. But, as you know, the real test of a player's ability is Double A.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think if he continues to do well in Class A, maybe he'll go to Class A Advanced in St. Lucie. Maybe he'll go right to Double A, which would be the aforementioned Rumble Ponies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real test. And I think there is where we'll see if he has a real potential or not. But in the meantime, teams are going to have fun with it, and teams are going to draw a lot more, so I'm all for it. It's not totally in my wheelhouse. It's the player side as
mm-hmm.
opposed to the promotional side, but it does affect the business a lot. And I say have fun with it. I mean, there's a lot of people who get mad at Tebow, and there's all this sympathy for this one theoretical player who's not you know, on a roster right now because Tebow took his spot, and I'm sorry for that guy. We should track him down. But it's a good story. It's fun. It's literally been more than 2 decades since we've had anything close to this, so just why not enjoy it?
Yeah.
That's how I look at things.
I like that. That's a good outlook to have. So before we let you go today, one more question. What is your favorite part of your job?
Well, you know, I think my tagline, or I don't think my tagline, I've made my tagline, you know, exploring America through minor league baseball, because while I did start out writing about the business of baseball, and I still do, I hope to have a readership and people who are interested in what I do and what I write, you know, beyond just people who work in minor league baseball. So I'm really just trying to tell the story of exploring America through minor league baseball, and that's been absolutely my favorite part of the job is getting to visit all these places. And at the end of this season, I'll have been to 157 of the 159 ballparks, just missing two in Colorado. I just couldn't work them into the itineraries.
Wow.
So I've been able to go everywhere, and it gives you the context, and this is what I always tell people, it gives you the context to go to places you wouldn't go. You're probably not going to go on vacation in Beloit, Wisconsin, or in Elizabethton, Tennessee, mm-hmm. or any number of these places, and it gives you that context for American exploration that once you're in these places, you get to find out what it's all about. You get to see what it's like, and you know, sometimes you hear a lot of disdain of like, oh, good luck there, you know, good luck in Beloit. I'm just like, why wouldn't you want to go to literally anywhere? Why wouldn't you want to go there? It's a great way to explore America, and it gives you that context, and it's given that to me professionally, and I'm always trying to encourage people within their abilities and means to do the same. And I've connected with a lot of people through the years who do that, and it's kind of a weird little cultish community that you know, we all correspond and talk about ballpark road trips, and you know, what better way to see America? Minor league baseball.
That just sounds so great. I'm very jealous. It sounds just a wonderful way to spend the season. Thank you so much for joining us on the Cut Forecast. It was great. People can follow you on the internet, on Twitter. You're Ben Hill. They can look you up, your stories on MILB.com, but they can also follow you at Ben's Biz.
That's right, yeah.
With a Z, Biz with a Z.
Yeah, Ben's Biz, BENSBIZ, and Ben's Biz blog. You can Google that. MILB.com, the official site of minor league baseball. You know, I'm around.
Great. Well, hopefully you'll come back on the show and tell us about your amazing road trips over the summer.
Hey, anytime. Okay. It'd be my
All
pleasure.
Right. Thanks.
That was great. Thanks to Ben Hill for coming on the podcast. It's always a pleasure to have all these reporters on our podcast.
Yeah,
I really
fun.
Like it. It's nice. It's like we're in a whole MLB.com family.
And now we learned so much stuff about the minor leagues. I mean,
I know. But unfortunately, it is now time to summarize our podcast into 140 characters, one tweet that accurately and adequately condenses our podcast into one bite-sized chunk. Chris, I'm going to have you go first.
Okay.
What do you got for us?
Let's see here. All right. More ballpark grasshoppers, please. I need some Super Taco Run fuel. Hashtag go rally cat go. Hashtag no jinx.
Wow, that was actually really, really good.
That was really good. Gemma, what do you got for us?
I'm going to go with the Mariners should adopt the hashtag rally cat and feed it toasted grasshoppers. Hashtag cut forecast.
Okay, that's good too. I think I'm going to have a terrible one here. Okay, here it is. You know what would be the worst ballpark dish of all time? Grasshoppers in a pirate hat prepared by Martha Stewart.
That would be awesome. I don't know what you're talking about. Worse.
If you have a tweet that more accurately and adequately summarizes our podcast in 140 characters, please tweet it at us at Cut4 with the hashtag Cut4Cast. We will retweet the best ones. We will like the slightly less good ones, and we will ruthlessly mock the ones that we think are terrible. You can follow us on Twitter at Cut4. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Cut4. If you do that, all of our content will appear in your newsfeed. It's so convenient. If you go to MLB.com/cut4, you can read all the articles that we produce. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, queries, life concerns, any moral quandaries, please email us cut4cast@MLB.com. That's cut4cast@MLB.com. This is a podcast. I don't know if you're aware of that, but it is. And you can actually subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. While you're doing that, you can leave us a rating, 1 to 5 stars. You can write us a review. We would love that. It helps other people find the show. Chris, thank you for joining us this
week. Pleasure as always.
Gemma, as always, thank you for being here.
Of course.
But mostly thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.